to our crossbreed EPD adjustment tables. And this year he will have crossbreed EPD adjustment factors for carcass traits for some of the breeds, and that'll be the first time that we've had that. And and so we're excited about having those crossbreed factors for carcass traits. Thank you, Larry.
Okay. Okay, looks like this is working here. Where's that? Got it. Okay, I'll go through this quick. I know a lot of you have seen this, seen several of these things before, and fortunately the growth traits don't change too much in this update this year. I just want to do our quick review slides for those of us that need a little reminder on this process and how these things work right now. As most of you know, these crossbreed EPDs have been calculated for a number of years now, starting with Larry Tunduff, who's here this year in our audience, not New Zealand this year, and Dr. Dale Van Vliet. These account for differences in the EPDs between the breed associations because of differences in bases primarily, and you use the data that we've developed over several years, over the last 30 odd years at U.S. Meat Animal Research Center and the GPE project. Basically, the process for doing this is really relatively simple. I do have some equations in here, so I'll probably have more equal signs than what Steve did in the last presentation, but I don't think it'll be too bad. Basically, we solve for breed of sire solutions. That's, like I said, using the GPE data, basically looking at, in our data set, what are the differences that we see between breeds. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, that GPE data comes about by mating sires of different breeds to a resource population of females, and those progeny are a direct estimation of one half of the breed difference, or expected to be. Those breed, basically, crosses are adjusted to full heterosis, and we sample the sires based on trying to get in industry representative bulls. Okay. The step two of the process, which we do every year, is try to get the EPDs for, from the most recent national cattle evaluation from the sires that were used in GPE, and also what the average of the EPDs were for all breeds in 2006, okay, basically 2 years before whatever update is. Those will be the animals that have current yearling weights, essentially. Okay. Take that data and calculate a regression coefficient, which allows us to put our data at USMARC on a scale that reflects the industry, where the industry scale is the difference that we see between the EPDs and the industry. Okay? So we calculate this B coefficient as the fraction of the EPD expressed in USMARC phenotype, progeny phenotypes. And you expect that to be 1, but because of differences in management that we have on the center, I won't claim that we're exactly industry representative. We talked before, it'd be nice if we had another meat animal research center in Florida. Okay, same sort of thing. We don't have the same environments as what we do in the rest of the country. We need to adjust our data in order to compare it directly with those industry standards. Okay, just as a background, this is this year's regression coefficients on the growth traits. Generally, they are pretty close to expectation. I think for almost every year now, weaning weight's been a little bit below 1 in general. Yearling weight's been a little bit further above 1, and birth weight's been pretty close to spot on. In terms of our maternal weights, we expect 50% of the direct genetic effects in our second generation animals. That's pretty close, and just a little bit above for the milk. So not too far off, and don't change things a substantial amount in general. Once we have those adjusted data from the center, adjusted for the industry EPDs, we compute an adjustment factor using these data, all of these on an industry scale, and basically you just add these adjustment factors using these equations, these table factors, to the EPDs from different breeds in order to compare animals from different breeds on the equivalent scale. Okay? So that's the background. I think most of you were pretty aware of that already, or as aware as you wanted to be, as long as you get the adjustment factors. Basically, this year, there are a few changes, as Mark hinted at already. I'll talk about this later here. We've added carcass trade after teasing with that, I think, for a number of years now, and finally have some factors on 8 of our 16 breeds. In national cattle evaluation, there have been some changes this year as breed centers start to switch around who's doing what EPDs. We have some base adjustments, and those affected the factors a little bit this year. Primarily, the big one we saw with that was with South Devon, who had a pretty substantial base shift, but doesn't really change what we predict in terms of breed differences, just in terms of the adjustment factor. We have some more weight records and some more maternal records on a few progeny as well. Okay. Any other changes we see then this year beyond those reflect differences in the methodology or data that are in the breed associations themselves. And just as a headway here, I won't talk too long on the growth traits, but I have some slides for it. In general, if you look at Angus versus the others in terms of what their actual breed difference is, most of them were relatively minor. As I talked about a little bit last year, Angus is continuing to have a higher slope, a higher, more intense selection in terms of the weaning weight and yearling weight. We continue to see that in general relative to the other breeds. And then in terms of milk, actually Angus slowed down relative to the other breeds this year. Okay. Numbers of progeny, real quick, Hereford Angus, we have the most data. Obviously, they've been in every cycle. There are base that we use to tie everything together. And beyond that, most of our greatest numbers are with the top seven breeds, actually six of the top seven breeds that were in cycle seven, with Simmental, Limousine, Charolais, and Gelvey here. And Red Angus was in that cycle where they were in for the first time, so they're not as big necessarily. In terms of birth weight, chains are relatively minor in terms of breed comparison differences. I don't see anything substantial here right now. These are all in your proceedings, and I'm just going to try to go through these pretty quick so we get on to the carcass data. In terms of weaning weight, again, like I said, most breeds are Angus improved a little bit relative to most breeds, so most of the breeds are a little bit more negative or a little bit smaller relative to Angus. In terms of relative to each other, changes aren't that substantial beyond the Angus changes. Okay. In terms of yearling weight, we see the same sort of trend. Okay. And like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on these. If you spot something, feel free to stop me. Okay, and in terms of milk, we see kind of just a slight reverse trend, but it's only a pound or two. Okay. This is kind of a way we looked at last year. These were some slides that Larry Cundiff developed last year and sent to me, and I've updated them this year a little bit for the those seven breeds that were in that cycle seven set. And basically what these tell you are the reasons why Angus has changed relative to some of the other breeds in general because of the selection pressures and so forth, and give you a ranking currently versus historically where the breeds have been at. Not too much of a surprise in birth weight. Most breeds towards early 90s started putting pretty high pressure on relaxing, on keeping birth weight stabilized or decreasing birth weight overall due to calving ease. In terms of weaning weight, you can see a lot of the British breeds really started at a very similar stage back when national cattle evaluation started out. The slope's been a little bit higher than for Angus, and which is part of the reason. Not sure I can go back easily. Hey, only one scientist to screw in the light bulb here. Okay, so here we go. Basically, you can see Angus has a much higher genetic trend slope over time. That's part of the reason why they've caught up with some of the other continental breeds and what we see in terms of our trends on breed differences, and why Angus continues to increase relative to the other breeds and those breed differences on that early slide. Okay. Same thing for yearling weight, only even to a greater extent, I'd say. Angus is now the second. In terms of these breeds, with only Charolais being higher in terms of yearling weight on that trend, and I don't think most of these things surprise us when we think about where they were starting out at national cattle evaluation and where they've gone since then. came. In terms of maternal milk, again, we see the pressures and then some of the slowdown in pressures that have kind of happened in the last few years, depending on what the breeds are really trying to do in terms of milk. Okay, these are the adjustment factors. I'm going to skip through these in the interest of time because these are available. I think people know how to use it. I've gone over the example for what's going on. These are available in your proceedings and will be available in several press releases. If there are any questions as you look at these sorts of things in the proceedings, feel free to stop me on the adjustment factors. But basically, just remember the policy. If you want to compare two animals of different breeds, just add the adjustment factor to their EPD and compare those two animals directly then. Okay. Just a last final look at the growth traits here before I move on to carcass. And this is just putting the birth weight, wean weight, and yearling weight on a scale using what our averages are at the center, at the U.S. Meat and Research Center, and kind of shows you really if you were to mate an animal unrelated to these breeds, mate to a dam that's unrelated to these breeds, these are the kind of pound you might expect in terms of breed differences, breed of sire differences between the progeny resulting from those crosses. Okay, and it's just a good take-home slide to help you kind of put things into a little bit of perspective for how much difference 20, 25 pounds really is in terms of what these averages are. Okay. With that, that's growth. Are there any questions on growth? I know I went through that fast, but I want to leave time for Dr. Cundiff here at the end. So, no, there actually isn't. And the thing about mature weight, we do have differences on mature weight from cycle 7 and starting to from cycle 8, I believe. I throw those terms out like everybody just knows what those are. I don't mean to do that. But those seven breeds that were on those genetic trend slides, Larry, do you have some input on those? If I remember it, the British breeds are fairly close in terms of mature weight to the continental.
The differences in those seven breeds in mature weight are very small. Herbert Angus, Red Angus, Herbert Angus, Simmental are all about the same size. Gelby is the lightest mature cow weight now. And, you know, 30 years ago, they were all above the British breeds. But the Gelby would be the lightest now, followed by the Limousine, the next lightest. And then Angus and Herbert and Simmental, all about the same size. Charlotte is slightly larger. In our Cycle 7 sample, as was by the, that's the breed solution. I believe there's only one breed that does EPDs for mature weight so far, and that's Angus. So we aren't able to do this kind of an analysis yet for mature weight.
So if we were going to adjust our sampling here for what animals we'd have to use a proxy like yearling weight or something to that effect to see how close we're getting. We haven't done that right now. I don't think we could do an across-breed EPD process.
I'd like to point out, I'm amazed that the Angus mature weight genetic trend is flat as a fritter. And it's an amazing thing considering that in view of that yearling weight trend that's just shooting up. I believe it's because they put a lot of emphasis on correlated traits like mature height and brain scores and birth weight.
Yep.
Birth weight positive pressure tends to bend that growth curve. So,
that,
I'm interrupting.
Nope,
much,
no,
interrupting
not at all. Not at all. Yeah. And we're seeing curve bending going on here or something to that form. I agree with Larry on that. So these are just some quick summary slides. They'd be available on the website if you're interested in them later. Carcass EPDs, as we get to that here, basically there's been 8 breeds that I was able to do this with this year based on what they had for EPD availability and what we had for data. Just some quick look at this. We've been discussing this a long time. I think probably the last 6-7 years we've shown what the regressions are and kind of given a message that we're a little worried about this because of the data and the amount of data that we have in contributing to carcass weight. The steer data, and then as well as we've got EPDs that are lower accuracy in general for carcass traits. Okay, So I'm kind of the new guy, and I went ahead and punted anyway, and tried to move this along, and I think we get some pretty good results that make a lot of sense. But I do want to throw some cautions up as I get to this a little bit. Basically, we've got the same idea as the factors for weight traits in general. If we see if EPDs predict the differences that we see at US Mark, that's the important thing. That's where those Bs, those regressions, come in. And if so, we adjust the breed basis using the US Mark predicted breed differences. Okay? So these are the concerns. I just kind of talked about these already, but the EPDs are less accurate in general. We're getting a lot better, primarily through the use of ultrasound and combining our ultrasound data and our carcass data into one EPD overall. There's fewer US Mark progeny that we have contributing to this. We only get the steer data. We don't get the heifer data. Those are the ones that are culled. That's going to continue to increase and continue to help as we sample more breeds over time with new plans moving forward with GPE. The consistency of the EPDs between breeds. This is where I have a few concerns, and this is why we have 8 breeds in here this year instead of, I think we could have had 11, maybe 12. Basically, we've got ultrasound reporting versus traditional carcass weight reporting. And we've got different endpoints for different types of EPDs. I tried to look at these a little bit, and actually Dale Van Vleck had some ways to try to take care of this. I think although it's good, it adds a lot of complications towards the use of these crossbreed factors. And so right now I'm going to stick to a policy, and we decided to stick to a policy that we want the EPDs to be on an age-consistent endpoint, and we want the EPDs to be reported on a carcass basis. A combined carcass basis if possible, but definitely on a carcass basis in order for them to be eligible for the crossbreed process, okay? Which is the recommendation of BIF, I think, last year. Yep, okay. Methodology differences are disappearing. For instance, Angus combined is about to release next week. Bill or Sally, next, sorry to put you on the spot. But next week, releasing a combined analysis of ultrasound and carcass into a carcass scale, and basically that very EPD was used in this data to use for the combined analysis, and they're one of the 8 breeds. So 8 breeds, like I said, we're able to apply EPDs in this form this year. There's more expected next year. I want everybody to remember this is the first year and expect changes in years to come. And I think Dale used to say that quite a bit in the early 90s with the growth traits. I'm going to be saying that quite a bit probably for the next number of years as we do this, as we get more data. And you'll see in a minute why. These are the breeds that we were able to consider this year. Limousin actually reports, I think, rather than a fat thickness EPD, they report a yield grade EPD, so they weren't included for that analysis. Otherwise, these are the 8 breeds. And this is part of where I'm coming to, where we've got a word of caution. And if you remember, we want these regressions, and that's that B factor I had before. This represents how close our differences that we see in the US Mark data are to the EPDs and the differences that we expect based on the sire EPDs. Okay? These are those regressions. And if we look at that, we see for marbling and fat thickness, we have regressions that are fairly considerably below 1 at 0.74 and 0.69, okay? Our differences that we see in US Mark data are a fraction of the differences that we would expect to see if we were looking at, if we were based on what the industry EPDs are, okay? That's the take-home message from that. We don't see as great a difference as you might expect, okay? We've puzzled through why that is exactly. I'm not positive why that is exactly right now. Our system may be a little bit different, but not tremendously. So we're hoping that changes as we get more data, okay? Ribeye area, we've got the opposite trend. We have greater ribeye area differences and at on center than what we do would expect based on the EPDs. The effect of this are that the differences between breeds in the crossbreed analysis are going to be magnified for both marbling and fat thickness. They're going to be bigger than the EPD scale, and the differences between breeds for ribeye area are going to be shrunk because we're dividing by that B, by dividing with the differences we get by that B. Okay. So these are the breed differences then, based on adjusting to 2006. And although remember, shrunk for marbling and fat thick, or I mean greater differences than expected for marbling and fat thickness, shrunk for ribeye based on what our estimates are at the center. But otherwise, I don't think anything here is too surprising, and too surprising to where people expect if you think about British versus continental differences. Marbling is generally higher for the British breeds. We've got maybe a slight exception for South Devon there, and we've got a slight exception for continental breeds in terms of Solaire, I'd say there, but otherwise differences aren't too far off than what we might expect. Ribeye area generally bigger for the traditionally continental breeds. Don't think that's surprising us too much in general. And fat thickness, generally the British breeds are fatter in terms of fat thickness as well as marbling. Okay. The thing that I'm cautioned and that maybe concerns me a little bit is, especially in fat thickness where we've got these differences being magnified, if we think about a 3/10 difference in terms of fat thickness, that's a substantial amount in terms of yield grade. And if we think about only fat thickness differences, so we've got some things that might cancel that out with the rest of the real yield grade equation. But I hope that regression gets a little bit bigger. I'm not sure that those differences should be as big as that right now. Now, we do feed animals so that they are fatter than traditional yield grades, and that could be some of where we're seeing that as well. These are the factors. Again, these are going to be published in both the press release and in the proceedings. You'll find these. We had these represent the new Angus EPD. That's the zero scale for this. That's going to be released next week for all three of these traits. And I don't think, beyond the breed differences, basically there isn't a lot of genetic trend in any of these breeds for any of these traits. So these factors are very similar to the breed differences overall. Okay. In summary, the regressions are significant within the EPD type. They're just not as close to one as what we had on the growth traits, and that's a function of accuracy of the EPDs, of the data that we and of the data that we have on center right now. And I expect that to get better over time. Remember that the marbling of fat thickness regressions being less than one implies that our differences that we see on center are not big enough relative to the industry. And I want to caution you that's probably going to change over the years. I hope it does change. The differences between breeds are in the expected difference, expected direction and relative magnitude. Though I think we're getting marbling, ribeye, and fat thickness differences that mostly are reasonable. The data are still limited relative to growth, and factors and breed comparisons are likely to change as the system. As the system is implemented, and more data should be added to the system next year already. So we should get a little bit better and maybe get a few more breeds as well in this. For the future, I just want to think, are there any thoughts about the carcass results right now? And I'm open to any input on things that we can do better, of course. We hope to increase the number of breeds. It depends on the association decisions, whether those do get included. But hopefully that happens. And then as we get into this and as we see more traits developed, I realize, a lot of this is going to hinge on what happens with whole genome selection and what we end up needing to do in terms of breed adjustment with whole genome selection. It depends a lot on whether we put breeds in those models or not, or what we need to do and how well those are estimated too. But as we get into that, I hope we can continue to do this on some other traits. That I think the industry needs to be able to compare across breeds as well, such as carcass weight, calving ease, and any others as things are developed. So with that, I'll take any questions or comments. Happy to answer any questions, and of course I'll be around for the rest of the meeting, and Mark would be able to answer the questions too very well. So any questions? Dick? The idea is, yeah.
Do you do the serious
water? Yes, we do. Well, that's true. Yeah, that's. Well, I mean that's all true, and I will grant you that is different than the system. You know, the way these things are supposed to work with Dorian's middle box, whether it does or not, is we're doing age adjustment in the industry on the carcass part of the scale. The correlations we have between the ultrasound and the carcass measures are supposed to take that into account. I realize they don't perfectly. And the serial slaughter on the age point should be should be reflective of that age adjustment in the industry as well. I said a lot of ifs, I said a lot of should. There's a lot of room for that middle box, okay? I'm hedging all over the place. But I understand that that's a very legitimate reason why our data is different. I don't know why the bees would be lower or higher, and I'd really have to think about why they'd go in one direction or another. But yeah, it's a valid point. No, I haven't done that right now. That'd probably be a good thing to look at.
I'm curious what that fee looks like.
Yep.
I would suggest that ultrasound data on bulls is on an age basis, because 99% of them are taken when they do yearling weights, and the parameters the breed association have for age taken yearling weights are fairly narrow. You want to include the whole crop, you have to be in a 365-day range. So